On this tape, I like to say a little bit about the living in Siberia and the living by the Volga and how those houses were built there. And where we stayed, the people's name was Paul, and Mary stayed at Krause's. And those were brothers and sisters, like I said before on the other tape. But their houses were built, the one we lived in, it was halfway, a sort of a little hill was halfway taken down. And then on one side, they dug in about, maybe 5 feet into their little mountain. And they started from there on and built out. And they had just three rooms. They had a kitchen, and then they had a big pantry where they had all the food in barrels of lard and so on. And then they had one big waiting room and one bedroom. And then they had a little eating place for the help. And there was a hired Russian man and a German fellow. And then the two boys, and they slept all on one, how would I say it, on one platform. And this platform was built, they put in four stakes into the ground before they hardened the floor. It was all dirt floor. And then they built it halfway up, and then they made a platform, and the boys had about a ladder that was about 2-3 steps they had to get up and climb up on top, and that was where the bed is. And they had no mattresses or straw to sleep on. They just slept on the hard boards. And then in this room was a big table then, and there the hired help ate, and there we also spent the evenings. The boys had dominoes that they played and so on, and that was that part of living. But the Mr. and Mrs. Paul, they had a separate bedroom, and then there was another bedroom for the kids, and then one for the three girls and a hired maid. They all slept in one, but that was on the first floor where it was dug into the hill. And then from one side you go up, and it's half of the roof is a hill in dirt on it, and the other half was sort of slant down with straw on. And it was very, very cold. And then where the horses and the cows were, and where our well was, that was next to the boys' room, where the two girls lived in the bedroom, and next to the boys' room. There were these two rooms together. And then was the big kitchen, and then up into the second, it was just about 3 steps up. And that's where the Mr. and Mrs. lived, and they had sleeping quarters there. But it was so cold in the winter that they had outside where the sheep were. They had maybe about 15 sheep or so, and they had made about 6-foot wide fence around. And the fence was inside the fence, and then outside the fence, a sort of like a round tire shape, but a big one. And then they had they filled that all in with all kinds of straw and stuff in between the 4 or 5 wide fence, so that kept the sheep from not freezing to death. And then they had a very heavy roof on it and fastened to this fence, and there were the sheep in. It was dark day and night. They had just a little tiny opening on the back in the roof. And the chickens were in the same place. And when we go and gather some chicken eggs, most of the time they was cracked open, they was frozen. Then in the evening sometimes we hear these great big wolves coming from the forest. We lived close to a very, very big forest. The trees were just cracked in the nighttime from the frost. And here comes these big wolves howling around. There were sheep to be had and cattle in the barn, but they couldn't get them. And the next to us was a great big lake. It was a half a mile across each way. And so our water supply that we had right in our barn, where the cows were and the horses, the same way like in Germany, next to the house. They have it under one roof. And that we had a great big well dug out, and the water would stand day and night, and it would never sink. We could keep with the, take water out with the bucket and feed the horses and the cows and all the house supply, and the water level would never go down because it was right there by the lake, and the lake pushed the new water up all the time. It was really nice. We didn't have to crank it up from the bottom. And then this was the, and then in the spring of the year, the first year that I was there, we had to take the sheep out to graze in, while they were having the babies. And so there were two girls that belonged to the Powells, and then myself. We took the sheep out and out way out, back closer to the woods, and they grazed, and they had this little baby lamb. And then we sometimes had to carry him because they couldn't walk yet. And so we brought him home every night, and every morning we took him back to graze all day. And this other livestock that they had, there was a hired man, and he lived there. He had a nice little home, and he had a place for a garden. And he would come in the morning and take these three families that were there, the cows and little baby horses or whatever they had, out to graze. And they take him out quite a ways where the forest would start already. And they keep him all day. In the evening they bring him back. And this man got a place for a garden, and he got the house to stay in, just one room Russian house, and they all slept on top of that bake oven, and on the bottom where that platform was, that they were eat and sit and visit. They had no furniture in the house, and their mother had died, and the little boy was about 3 years old, and the other boys were bigger, but everybody went out in the summer with the father to watch the cattle. And so that's the first summer, the first spring that we did. That's the kind of work I did. And the boys was plowing and putting grain in. But in the first winter that we spent there, we came sort of late in fall. And that was a very hard winter. We weren't used to these awfully hard winters. We nearly freeze to death, and we had something on our feet, and then they made these out of sheep wool. They would make sort of like boots, and then we put those boots on over whatever we had rags wrapped around our feet, and we go out, and we couldn't stay out too long, and then the feet would start freezing. It was just absolutely too cold. And then in the spring of the year, the boys had to all get busy and get the manure out of the barn, and they spread it out sort of thin when the sun was shining real hard. It was always straw. They put lots of bedding straw in every night, and so it was all saturated with that stuff. And he had a machine, Mr. Paul, that he would put that machine on and press it down with the handle, and it would make like a brick. And then us girls and everybody who could carry a brick would take it and put it on a different place. They had two boards laid on the ground, and then we piled this pressed out brick manure up. And during the summer, it would dry out. And they had a little tiny roof made over it so the water wouldn't get in when it rains and soak it up again. In the winter, we carried that in. It was all dry. And with that we heat the whole house, but the food was cooked with straw, and whenever they baked bread, I had to sit for about 2 hours on the floor, and the boys brought in great big stacks of flour, and I would straw, and I would take and feed it into that big oven where the bread was supposed to be baked, and that made also warm the top of that the oven that was flat, and next to that was that platform where the boys would sleep on, and that kept the house sort of a little warm during the night. And I sometimes would almost burn my face. For 1.5, 2 hours, I would take bundles of straw and tighten it up, wrap it together, and push it in the oven with a stick. And that was before the oven got all white inside. And then they cleaned it out and put the bread in and baked it. And that was done every week because there were so many people to be fed. And this was the first year of Siberia. And then they had machineries there where they would thrash the grain, but all the plowing and putting that in, that was all done by hand. So it was nice, but the field was just beautiful. And it was not too hot in the summer, always more on the cold side. And, but the garden grew very, very good. They had an awful lot of watermelons. And then in the fall of the year, they would go out with the wagon and gather in the watermelons and bring them in the house. And then the women would cook it down to make syrup out of that. And that was a very, very hard job. Feed the oven with straw. I don't know why they never burnt that manure. They only burnt that manure for heating the house. Now from there we go now to the Volga, to closer towards home. But I said all this other stuff on the other tapes. I'm not going to repeat it. But in one town where we lived, it had a great big power plant. I don't know what they did with that, and had a great big bridge over that, and the water was very, very strong coming underneath the bridge. And so there was an awful lot of crab. And so everybody, these Russian people, they go and gather up these crabs and they cook them. And then they told our boys that they should pick up these crabs and put them in, bring the water real boiling hot, and then put them in, and then they die instantly. So the boys got these crabs home, and Millie said, "Don't do that." She said, "That hurts the animal too bad." Well, there was food behind all this pain. So Albert got a great big cooking pot, and we had one, took it along to Siberia and brought it back. It was an iron one. And he put the water hot, but I don't think it was too boiling hot, because he put two shoeboxes full of living crabs in there. And boy, did they make a noise. They sang music and made a noise. It was just sad. And, well, he ate the crabs, but I couldn't eat them. And so anyway, we didn't stay there too long because my brother-in-law got really sick. And so we tried to get to the Krauses before the winter came. And when we got to the Krauses there, they had, again, one great big room in a little partition, like a little fireplace, but this fireplace went way up to the ceiling, and that divided the room a little bit in half. So there they had two beds in the back part of the room, and then the kitchen in the two beds in front, and that's where the Krauses lived. Now when we got there, Millie and Dan right away rented us a one-room place, which were more common than two. It was not so expensive. And we moved in there, but the two boys, they stayed with Krauses. Albert refused to come along, I don't know why, because the Krauses had two grown boys and they went fishing in the Volga all the time. And what did he want there by us? And they had good food there, because Uncle was working. But so one day Dan said to Millie, "I'm going to go and visit Albert." And Millie said, "Dan, if you go, you'll never come back." And he said, "Oh yes, I'll come back." But he never did. He stayed there. And she never saw him alive again, talked to him, because shortly after then she had to die. And so he lived with the Krauses. But in the winter time, they couldn't do much fishing because the Volga was solid frozen over. But in the summer, they went fishing in the fall, and they had a lot of fish to eat and so on. But we stayed in this one-room house until Dan got so very, very sick, and then we had to carry the wood home, Mary and I, out of the woods. Every day we went, when the storm wasn't blowing too hard, we went out there and bundled up with those two coats that Mary and I got, each one from the Red Cross from the America, which I said before already, bundled up, and we went and got little bundles of wood, whatever we could find, pick up loose, and everything was under snow, and those that were up on high we couldn't reach, and then we didn't know what was dry and what was green. We didn't have an axe to chop them down, so it was really tough. I wish that the boys would have stayed with us. But anyway, then Dan died, and then we moved into this other place that I said on the other tape, where Millie died then. But by the Volga, the women, I don't know what kind of they call them, I couldn't say it in English, in German they call them Tatar, and they must be Turks or something. And those women would wash the clothes at home in a big barrel, and then they take it in a basket and go down to the Volga and knock a hole in the ice if they were fortunate before the Volga was too much frozen. And then they rinse it out in that ice cold water and bring it home and hang it up, and it's stiff like a rug. And I don't know why their hands didn't freeze off, but that's what they did. The German people, they usually carried the water from, or thawed it from snow, and they washed the clothes and hung it in the house, because outside it just wouldn't dry, it just freezes stiff and ends all night and all day. But finally the water did freeze out. And so that was very sad then, when we lived alone in, like I said before, that when she got so sick she had to die on the floor like a dog behind the stove. And in the summertime by the Volga, usually in the evening when it got a little bit, people came home from working, then from one side to the flour mill, there was all the whole little village was out bathing, and they all went nude in the water, men and women, and they all bathed nude. But when my Aunt Ma Krause went bathing, like the one time I went along, which I said I nearly drowned it, well then she kept the night clothes on the slip, and she bathed that way. But there was everybody bathed together and made nothing about it. That was the rules. And in the spring of the year, that Volga would break loose and come flying down, and the ice pieces were maybe 4 feet thick and it froze. And when it came to a certain bridge, then they couldn't get through them. Some pieces were too big. And so the man had to go with all kinds of gadget and try from the bridge on, push it straight so it could fly under, go through underneath that bridge. And sometimes the bridge was ruined a little bit and they had to repair it again. But from our place on, when these big, that last row of houses that stood next to the Volga, I think by now it's all Volga there, these ice plates, they just tear right in spring of the year into the side of the mountain, and they just dig holes out, and then pretty soon they have to move the houses off, or they go down into the Volga. And so there was a couple houses there, and there was a lady, she had a little store, and she wanted that little Alexander so bad. She said, I'll even buy him if you don't want to give him to me. She was a widow and had no family. But we wouldn't do that. We took him back home to his grandma. And from there on, the wood spread out and the Volga got flatter. It was not banky on the bottom, just one side was. And it leveled the trees, that the trees, the ice plates went right over. And it was really a strong floating river that was just carrying these ice plates. And the trees was knocked down, and all you could hear at night, crush, crush, another tree fell and they went over. And it was sort of sand dune in the summer. Then we could go and chop up those trees and take them home for fire. But every year it went further, it spread out more and spread out more. And that was really a tearing water stream. I've never seen anything like that. And those houses there were built more or less like the Russian houses, but in the richer houses, they had sometimes they had an ice basement. They had dug out a great big hole in the ground, and then when the water started coming down, the ice, and they would go out there with hatchets and saws, whatever they had, and they would cut the ice, the big ice pieces, in parts that they could put it on the wagon or sled and bring it to this basement, to this big dugout place, and they put that in, and then they put straw on top, and then they put another layer of straw, and they built that up. And then when the summer came, these grocery stores there, they had a butcher store there and one grocery store that we shopped, and then they had their milk cold, and they had their meat, they put that in that on top of that frozen ice, and it kept pretty good. And then towards about the end of July, then it was all water in it, but it soaked into the ground. And then it was very hard to buy meat. Whenever they butchered, they said, well, we're going to butcher tomorrow, you come and buy whatever you want to, either a pig or a cow, and then the people went and bought that day. But otherwise there was no meat to be had, because they had no refrigeration. In the same way with the milk, the women would come from the village into this little town about 4 in the morning. They would come and they carried the milks in sort of a bucket, and they'd pass our place and other places, and then if you wanted milk that certain day, you'd go out and you stand by the roadside, and then they pour you in either a quart or 2 quarts, and you pay them, and they take that into town and sell it at the market. So that was the only milk that a person could get in the summer. But it was nice living there, the town of the Volga. And some had real nice houses there. That was in town. And then we went to this place where we were less, closer to the German border, in town of my uncle, which I said before. Now there it was really miserable to be in a... That was my, in spring I was 13 then. From 12 to 13, if I had to live my life over and know what I know now, I think I'd have gotten myself something and hung myself on the nearest tree. That was just impossible to live through. Now we'll see how far my tape is. Well, I have lots of tape, I don't have to worry to get through this. But us children, we sure liked it by the Volga. Mary and I, we had sort of a half a bed sheet or whatever it was. It was more like a dish drying cloth. And we would go and hold it on each. She had two corners and I had two corners. And we would walk into the Volga, oh, maybe 10 feet. And then we saw it was getting darker and darker, because in the center of the Volga, it was so deep you couldn't even reach the bottom, where the water was really flowing, it was really dark. And then the little tiny fish, we just scoop him up in this net that we had made out of cloth. And we put him in a bucket and put water on. And then we did that for about an hour, and we had more than 2 coffee cans full. And we take him home and wash him real good. And we did that at the Volga. We washed him, cleaned him, took the inside out, but we never took the head off. And then we went home, and then Aunt put some oil in the pan, and she put some flour over the fish and salt, and she would bake him real crisp. She fry him real crisp. And you could eat those little, 5 inches long little fish. You could eat them just the way they were cooked. You didn't, no bone or anything that you couldn't chew up and crush, head and everything. And we did that a couple times a week. So we had pretty good food then. But never too much meat. Maybe once in 2 weeks. And we had no place to keep it. It was too hot. And then sometimes this Millie Krause, she would go when they would butcher a pig to this meat market there, and she would ask for the intestines. They wouldn't sell, because they would clean them and put sausage in it. but they would always sell her the cow's stomach. I mean, the, once I think she got a cow's stomach, but the other times, pig's stomach. And she'd bring it home and she'd take it to the Volga. And sometimes I helped her and we scrape that thing out and wash it and scrape it out and put it in water overnight. And then the next day she'd take a scissor and she'd cut little strips off and make like little dumplings. And we put that in a pot and cooked it and all kinds of other stuff in. And it made a real good soup. But it was all, the meat was always hard. It was never too soft for, because we had good teeth. And then in spring of the year, there was so many of these pigweeds growing there close to the sugar factory. So one day Uncle Krause asked the head man from the sugar factory if he could go down and cut off some pigweeds for, like we do here, parsley or, spinach. And so he said, yes, go all you want to. Later on it got some blooms on top and it got hard, it wouldn't. So we go down in a bushel basket full at one time, and Krause and I usually went. We cut the tops out and brought it home and took it to the Volga and washed it real good in the Volga. And then she bring it home and chop it real fine and put it in a pot, and half of it cooked first a little bit down, then we put more and more on. And we cooked a whole iron pot full, about maybe 4-5 quarts of this spinach. And then she put a little fry onions and we put a little grease in it and put that over the spinach. And then we had boiled potatoes, and that made us a meal. But it tastes just as good as spinach, even better. If I could find some pigweeds here where there would be no dogs around, I sure would like to once more in my life fill myself with that. Maybe it tastes so good because we had so little to eat. And but we had at least fish. The boys went fishing. And so this was the Volga now. And there, at this Volga, the people would come in from the countryside, and they was had camels there. And that was the first time in my life I saw a camel. And they would put baskets full of gunny sacks full of vegetables and grapes and whatever the farmers would raise and bring them to this certain village, which was called Samar, Saratov, this little town. And there they had a big place, maybe 5-6 empty lots. And there they had the camels on there. They would lie down and chew their cud, and there they would sell the goods that they brought in. And some brought loads of potatoes and whatever they raised. And so one time, Millie and Mary and the little guys, and my brother-in-law was still able to carry his son in the arms. And we walked through this market, and there was also some stores. The Jews were there, and they had stores like little homemade dolls and anything that they could put on display for people to buy, and bakeries or bread there, and stores with kerosene and sugar and what have you. So, but this fruit market was a little bit away from these stores. And so there was one man, he got himself a box, like a small crate with these green grapes, Thomas and Siegel's grapes that they make raisin out of. And when my brother-in-law passed by there, and he must have had a little money yet, and her mouth was just watering, and she looked at that, says, Dan, I never saw what kind of a wine that is. They call them Weintrauben in German. And so he said, I'll buy you some, and he took and bought her a little tiny piece. And then what could she do? She gave me two little berries, and Sam and Mary, and then what did she have? Little Alexander, and he had a couple, and it was gone. She didn't have anything in her way. But that was the first time I tasted raisin grapes. And the first orange I ever saw in my life was when we came to Danzig, Poland, and took the ship over to England. And the man that carried my business onto the ship and I gave them to him because I didn't know how to eat it or what they were for. But I should have taken them on the ship when I got severe sick and felt like vomiting all the time. That would have settled my stomach a little if I eat the rind on the outside. So that was the first time we tasted grapes. And then in the fall of the year, like after that, like I said, my brother-in-law died. And it was a nice little town in the